It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while and just smile. Just taking some clean, fresh air for me.
No sense in staying inside.
If the weather's fine and you got the time, it's your chance to wake up and plan another brand new day.
Good morning, Barcelona. Well, happy September. You're listening to English Radio Thursdays on Radio Canal, Barcelona 106.9 FM. I'm Virgil, and I'm back after a partial vacation during the month of August. I kind of hung around Barcelona, did a lot of things I hadn't done in a while, but caught up on a lot of concerts, caught up on music, walked around the city, and just chilled out, which was kind of different for me. But anyway, this is September. And this is actually Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. And as you know, the Prostate Net is one of the sponsors of English Radio. And obviously this is a month devoted to prostate cancer, but we believe that this is a issue that needs to be addressed every month because of the incidence of prostate cancer here in Barcelona, in Spain, in the world. We have to be aware of what we can do to help prevent it, help treat it, and help have a life afterwards. Well, as much as we don't want to talk about it, you know, vacation is over. You know, folks will be struggling back to work over the next week or so, and we'll be able to finally schedule services for things we wanted to have repaired that we couldn't get done for the month of August, and finally we'll be able to be back to function again. But for parents out there, the kids will be going back to school. I think I hear a cheer through the windows from mothers and fathers who are looking to normalize their lives again. But is school such a good thing today in this world of change? Are children learning more than they should, or maybe not becoming educated enough about life? Here to discuss these issues and more with us is a former guest, an activist, educator, Dr. Teresa Navis. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Well, before we begin to discuss the matters in question, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey to Barcelona, the work that you have done over the years, and what you're doing now.
Okay, I was born in Barcelona. I live in Premià de Dalt. I've lived there for a long time. And I was a former, I was a secondary school teacher when there was this opening at the university, and a bunch of us managed to get in. Those were the kind of TAs, so the asociados, very poorly paid, okay? And if people are not aware of that, my colleagues are still earning something like 500 euros a month. Yeah. When I was first hired, I was, it was twice as much, approximately, but it's gotten worse. And I did the kind of oposiciones that the first part of the oposiciones in order to get promoted. I've got the qualifications for that, but I saw that there was no permanent position, and I'm too old, and I decided not to wait. And I'm kind of the lucky ones because I'm a civil servant, so I went back to high school. I love teaching. Research is also okay. My cup of tea, but I do love teaching. And when I was at the university, they say, "Oh, yeah, I'm sure that you don't miss secondary school." And I said, "I do miss my students. Okay, it's the other kind of stuff that
yes,
there are always advantages and disadvantages.
So. The administration, the system, the politics,
the
parents.
So now I'm currently the coordinator of the language course. Courses for the EOI at Sanas, only for the youth, for the students ranging 14 to 16, and I'm very happy that I've got this position along with working in high school. I work for Ana Gironella de Mundet, which is one of the few, there are several, but they are not so well known schools, public schools that are ruled by the Ayuntamiento de Barcelona, the Barcelona Town Hall, City Hall.
Oh, very good. We'll be back to talk more with our guest right after this.
Oh. De tempos ancestrais, me vi de perto, no comum deserto, errante navegante no mar sem fim. Foi quando vi ela ancorar no cais. Do meu olhar, ela é a expressão da paz. É ardentia, pura simetria. Minha deusa Vênus.
That was Summertime, appropriately enough, by Sarah P., a Barcelona hometown girl who's made it good. And she lit up the stage at Jamboree last Saturday night. If you didn't catch her, she'll be back again before the year is out. You definitely should see. She's a great talent. Well, all of us, you know, who aren't parents, and maybe some who are, talk about how young people are different today from when we were kids. Would you agree with that? And if so, in what ways?
Oh, that's a tough question. In many ways, I suppose, because I mean, I'm 57, so I was raised in a society where there was a dictatorship here in Spain, and we still sort of see some of the things that remain of.
Do we ever?
Yeah, but it was quite strict. I mean, there were no political parties, and. You got the expectation, as Ken Robinson puts it, that if you study hard, if you get a degree, chances were that you would get a good job. Now kids are aware that this is not necessarily so, and that even if they get a job, they may not earn enough to support themselves. So my godsons, for example, are still staying in at home. They are really qualified. One of them, Jordi, is finishing his PhD, but he's almost 30 and he's still living with his parents. Not that he hasn't taken part-time jobs, not that he hasn't studied abroad. He did an MA. So I think that this must be something to consider, the expectations.
Well, the expectations are obviously being forced to become reduced in some ways. But as an educator, you know, you have to look at it from the standpoint that for the future of the society, we have to somehow produce the people who are going to be able to lead and take over the society. How do you give them hope, you know, show them optimism, show them that there are things that are possible that they can do?
It's quite difficult. It's a challenge. I mean, this is what most schools that are interested in innovation are considering. And there is a shift nowadays. We're talking about competences. So instead of having those academically oriented goals in which you were expected to know by heart and to recite a bunch of facts about the different disciplines, the different subjects, now it is more about enabling, being able to, and also getting them ready to work for themselves and hopefully, ideally, to promote critical thinking, which is something that if we have a chance to talk about course books, is not necessarily what it is encouraged.
Now, technology has been a major influence on young people since 2000 particularly, but do you think there's been a 100% positive factor?
No, and research shows the opposite. For example, I'm sure that you're aware of those research studies that point out that keeping a record of what's going on in the classroom, taking notes, if you do it on a computer, on
tablet or a smartphone,
yeah,
right?
Thank you. It's worse than if you do it by hand. And there are reasons for that that have been, but even if we're not aware of the reasons, the fact is that it is much better to do it in the other way. Having said that, using the technology in the class has some advantages for certain purposes, but it is, as anything, a tool. So it's not the solution of anything, but at all. I do use the smartphones in the class, the last 10 minutes of the class, or at the beginning to review the vocabulary, for example, because I teach English as a foreign language.
Okay.
There are those programs, Quizlet being one, or then the gamification. For example, Kahoot is very popular among students, and if you don't want to be that disruptive in the sense that they get very excited with Kahoot, there are others such as Socreative that are also very useful. So the gamification is part of...
Well, I think the whole thing is that, you know, going back to, I'll say when I was a kid, handwriting, penmanship was something that was taught. And again, everything was done by hand. We didn't have computers then to work with. And the studies that you refer to show that the process of writing things by hand gives a greater retention of what you're writing, of the information that you're seeing. So,
absolutely.
But now, the other thing that we see that's also different, and you talk about computers, laptops, tablets, is that it's made the process of generating information a lot easier. You know, you just plug in a phrase and then Google gives you the answer right there. So you're not really looking it up anymore. You're not really reading it in a book or going to the library per se. You're not really writing down the notes. You know, if you want, you can cut and paste, but it's not the same. So has...
But kids need to be somehow guided as how to use internet, for example, how to browse, how to be critical about, for example, the fake news, because how to trust the sources. And this is something that sometimes is taken for granted. And we said when we encourage them to do it on their own, I tend to find myself saying, I have to be on their shoes. Let me do it. See which are the sources. See what I find, and how can I possibly help them in order to decide what to trust, how to trust, and we're not used to teaching or guiding students in doing so. But I do think it's critical. We take for granted sometimes that just because we call them a digital generation, they know much better than we do. And I think that there are things that they know better or faster, or they can do more efficiently than we can. But there are those things that still need to be addressed.
Well, I think you referred to it earlier when you talked about critical thinking. I mean, the ability to be able to look at a source of information and be able to say, all right, this is what one particular point of view is. Let me explore the opposing point of view, and let me then try to see where the truth is in between the two. It seems as if we've now really to accept whatever source of information we trust or we believe in as gospel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen it, you know, in many, many places where, depending upon what TV program you watch, which website you go to, if they say it, then it must be true.
Mm-hmm. And there are some newspapers that have started creating tools for teachers or for people in education to help them, the students, in order to decide, all right, to what extent can I trust this source? Which are I'm thinking, for example, if I'm not mistaken, the New York Times has a very useful one I'm adapting, because this is for younger kids, okay, that I'm planning to use, being aware of that, yeah.
Well, I think, you know, the thing that's really interesting to me is that as we talk about the digital age and digital influence on kids, there was a study that was done, reported in many sources in the States, that a study of the digital technology usage among parents of Silicon Valley, you know, families, they showed that they believe that educational media, and we put that in quotation marks, could be beneficial for their children across subject areas like language, reading, writing, math, science, art, social studies, etc. But at the same time, they have been looking to curtail, in some ways, the usage of digital media. I mean, have you seen that the students are more knowledgeable, better equipped, more versed in these subjects, getting information from digital media as opposed to other sources?
That could be difficult for me to say, but I don't think that... let me give an example.
Perfect.
There are some videos that end up being very popular among them, which they share, and because I encourage them to bring into class some of their own interest, and we talk about, for example, the person you admire the most and why, and you get the very same kind of topics and videos, and then when you say, all right, Have you investigated who produces this, whether it's a religious, for example, organization or not, whether they are advertising any this embedded kind of
sales
commercial
message.
And then they manage to find some common patterns, but you have to lead them and you have to help them. I wouldn't say that because they are using digital media, they are better prepared than with books and other resources. And the opposite can also be claimed. It is a pity, for example, according to some studies, the way that technology has been used in the classroom, for example, at kindergarten, when kids are expected to be using the body, moving around, and instead of manipulating in the Montessori line of work, they are encouraged to see a triangle versus a cycle on a screen. So,
Okay. Well, we'll be back to talk more about this right after this song.
There's a lost and not a lonely man, just trying to understand. Oh, baby,
why we fall in love just to fall apart?
Seems to me that people fool themselves, should be with someone.
someone else. But they try to fix what's broken from the start. Oh,
and that was Zaylon with When I See You. Again, he was part of my vacation experience. Hadn't seen him before, hadn't really checked out his songs and styling. And he had been a backup singer for Amy Winehouse, and she kind of pushed him out to be a single performer, and he's done her proud, as we say. Well, you're listening to 106.9 FM, Radio Canoa Barcelona, English Radio in the Morning. We're here with Teresa Navas talking about the state of education around us here. Now, one of the things that we had talked about earlier that led me to have you on was that you talked about how many of the textbooks that our children are using today lack meaningful or significant presences of women. Can you give us some examples of those problems?
Yeah, not only do they lack some figures of women, but in general, the topics that they address may not be as meaningful as you may expect. Let me just give you the example from two courses of English that I've used, okay? The one we're using now, the three first units, okay? In the first unit, let me clarify that in each unit there is only one reading, okay, a large passage. So the first one that is chosen is the story of a guy that was locked in an elevator for 41 hours. Poor thing, okay, you know, with all the problems that we've got in the world. He happens to be a middle-class man, okay, with a job, which seems to be a decent job, fairly paid. And we spend the topic of that unit around that story. The second one is a freaky family from the States that teaches the...
Is it a freaky family?
Freaky. Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. I did trace who they were, okay? And the more I happened to know about them, the more scared I got, because I thought chances are that these are quite religious fanatics. Mm. But this is my suspicion. I can't prove that. And I do spend some time doing homework, okay? But I don't have all the time in the world. I am a secondary school teacher now, okay? Working in high school, therefore, I do have many hours of teaching, and I can't devote as much time as I used to conduct.
But you found enough to say that they are a freaky family.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the third one is from Britain, a couple that have got so far, okay, the last time I checked, 21 children. Oh, amazing! And they tell the stories and they sell the stories I can't prove that they sell it, but they are on Instagram all the time. And in order to find out the information about this family, the only two newspapers that had some information about them were The Sun, guess what, and The Daily Mail.
Tabloids.
Yeah. All right. So I thought, why is it that we choose those stories to be the single ones incorporated? I do have in the very same course book a very nice story about the starfish, which is this story about a kid that is throwing back the starfish that, because of the tide, were on the shore. And there is this adult who says, okay, doesn't make sense because there are many of them. And the kid, the story finishes by saying, oh, the kid throws the one to back to the sea and says, it did make a change for that one. There are nice stories, okay? But if there are nine lessons, and I've talked about the first three that I have got those topics, that's discouraging. And this is one course book, but the one I had 2 years ago, the very first topic had to do with a guy that went to the Amazon and got rich because he published The Adventure of Going to the Amazon. He went to the Amazon thanks to the fact that there was another guy, the name of whom was not mentioned in the story, but his name is... I thought that I could remember Chaco, I think it is, a local guy that also suffered the mosquitoes as the adventurer. And, this is the kind of values that prevail.
So is the case not so much only gender-specific, but in terms of stereotypical values, we're creating a false sense of worth for behaviors, that are being promulgated to generate revenues or whatever, but really not to advance the issue of education or of human development.
And this is English course books, not to mention history, for example. I don't want to think about what happens in those course books. I do know of one that I used, or physical education courses, in which they've got these very nasty remarks as far as girls, that they are not as competitive, that they are because they don't have the strength, or they are not as strong as, they don't have the will as boys have, and they can be really sexist, some of the remarks. One that I remember from a history book was that, women in that time, the privileged ones, the go to either read poems or rest for a while. I said, Are you kidding me? And the history book from one particular publishing house that I'm thinking of is exactly the same as the one that I studied back many years ago, except from the fact that some chapters, the Franco one and the Glorioso Alzamiento Nacional, were removed from the course book. But apart from that, and having included pictures with castles and pictures of ships, boats, with all the parts being tacked, as if this makes it easier. This is something that is mechanical, that can be then checked, tested, but doesn't necessarily promote critical thinking.
But that goes back again then to the school system, the administration, the curriculum development, the department chairperson. Why are they selecting these books or these stories to be taught?
I could say that because they are basically all the same. Okay, there are. I mean, I wasn't targeting to one particular publishing house. I would say that this is a liberal society that we live in, and this is the result. We get the very same book wants to be sold all over the world. And for example, in our country, in Spain, most of the schools are either private or semi-private. They are subsidized by the government, which means that all of us are paying the for the wealthiest kids, and those of us working in a public school don't get, for example, the material, not necessarily the course books, but the course books have to be paid by families that can hardly afford sometimes those course books. But even those publishing houses that want to make a difference end up competing among themselves. So the target student is not necessarily those most in need, the low achievers, but the average person that has got a family backing them up. You know that according to research, the factor that amounts the most important factor in how successful a kid may end up being is how the kind of family, what the family does for the kid. If you've got a family that encourages reading because you see them reading, there is a newspaper at home, there is a library, and they are educated, it correlates. The more well-educated parents, mothers in particular, are the better. So,
I mean, it goes back to the fact of the resources. Obviously, those kids coming from affluent backgrounds are going to have an advantage because they will have had access to computers or education, training, travel, museum going, whatever that would help augment their education. Where also, possibly kids from a lower economic situation would have to rely on the values of the parents. Have the parents spend a lot of time reading? Mm-hmm. Do they encourage reading? Do they value education?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing that we're looking at here, is that the values of the commercial establishments, the publishing houses, are driving and in some ways either augmenting the gap between the students.
Yeah, we tend to be quite naive when it comes to publishing houses. Almost everybody is aware that when it comes to food, for example, there are 5-7 main food companies that owe everything else. This is also the also truth when it comes to publishing houses, but very few people talk about it. So Pearson, for example, has been severely criticized in the United States, as far as I know, for having conducted all, or for being in charge, or having been given the chance to for the testing programs. The No Child Left Behind, for example, mm-hmm. in which kids were expected to pass state exams, state exams. Guess what? It was given to one particular publishing house, and there is the washback effect. Either to teach to the test, or because there is a test, then the course books are plant, baked. Yeah,
on the test.
Yeah.
Right.
According to that.
And it's again, that's the system. We'll be back to talk more with Teresa right after this.
After being out late, walking my baby back home, arm in arm over meadow and farm, walking my baby back home.
Walking baby back home.
We go long, harmonizing a song, or I'm reciting a poem.
Shakespeare has never sounded better ever since.
Isles go by and they give me the eye, walking my baby back home.
Walking my baby back home.
We stop for a while, I give him a smile, I snuggle my head to his chest.
And fuddles our head.
We start into bed. Oh, that's when I get,
that's when I get now.
My powder all over his vest. Hand in hand to a barbecue stand, right from my doorway we run. Eats and then it's a pleasure again.
It's a pleasure again.
Walking my baby,
walking my baby.
Talking my
just
baby,
talking my baby.
Loving my baby. I don't mean maybe. Walking my baby back home.
And that was the Ronald Baker Quintet featuring Michelle Hendricks, John Hendricks' daughter, on vocals with a standard from Nat King Cole, Walking My Baby Back Home. We've been talking about the issue of textbooks and their impact. There was a study done by Ana Lopez Navajas, Carolina Hamode, and Maria Vallo about the use of textbooks and their perspective on gender. Tell me some of the findings that they came up with and some of the problems that they identified.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody, parents in particular, but along with teachers, to check for themselves, because they've got this database that is made public, so, and it's free, and everybody can consult. And let's say English, because I mean, you would expect that in subjects, or we could agree that in subjects like, I don't know, chemistry or physics, the presence of men versus women would be higher, precisely because the historically there have been more sciences that were a male, and we all have those names in mind. If we are thinking of teaching French, teaching Spanish, Catalan, English, why would you expect that there is such a gap between the percentage of male figures being included and those of women? Why would you expect that the roles that are given are so...
more male-dominated?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And if you look at the pictures, you will see that they are helping, that they are nurses, that they are passive, whereas the boys being portrayed in those books for the study of a given language tend to show them as active, as engaging, as even the position that they take. We read from left to right, so you would find first the boy, then the girl. The boy tends to be taller no matter what. We do know that men, boys the same age may maybe Taliban, not necessarily systematically.
We know that girls usually at a younger age are taller than boys. Yeah.
But this is not the way the pictures portray them. Not even in a primary book. So this is a fantastic database that I would encourage the parents, students, to check for themselves.
What's the name of it, Teresa?
I've got it in my.
Anyway, it's Ana Lopez Navajas, Navajas, Carolina Hamodi, Hamodi, and Maria Vaio. Vailo, and it's a review, a study, a research study on gender perspectives in textbooks.
I can have it checked in my website because I've got it there.
And your website is?
My website. If you type Teresa Naves sites, it's the first thing.
Okay, perfect. That's okay. So we can just do a little, that's what we got Google, folks. You can just pull out your cell phones now and type in Teresa Naves sites, and you'll get the information. Now, again, if you look at this, and you got to believe that all of these publishing companies have women in significant roles within them as editors, writers, whatever. Why do you think things are so skewed toward male domination?
Because society is. Because, I mean, being a woman does not necessarily mean that you're aware of gender issues. We do, I mean... as much as I would like to believe that I'm aware of some gender, that I'm concerned with gender, I'm sure that I do without even being aware of that, following some of the malpractices that any teacher, just because they happen to have boys and girls, end up doing in the class. I remember a friend of mine who did this book for LGBT families. And she said, okay, what do you think about that? And I told her, okay, should I? And she could see that...
you were hesitant.
Yeah. And it had to do with the pictures. The text was perfect. But in spite of the fact that she was really concerned with that, I said, have you noticed who's on the swing, who's running, who's playing, who's kicking, and
who's playing the dolls, who's, you know...
No, they excluded that. They excluded that, and they were quite careful as to have counted the number, the instances, the number of times that boys and girls appeared in the text. But the positions and what they were doing, they tended to be much more passive. And so it's difficult. You need to be aware, and you need to keep trying every single time. But I would say that the reason why we keep doing this is because many educators are not aware of that, and they could go in denial. In the UK, there was this study that they did, in which it was clear that by age six, boys and girls had expectations as what a girl was and what a boy was. So, for example, there is this fantastic video clip in which kids are asked to draw a firefighter, a surgeon, and a war pilot. By far, most of them drew a male firefighter, a male surgeon, a male pilot, and only 6% of them drew it as women. And those kids were 6 year old when that happened. And surgeons, as far as I know, in the UK, I don't have the figure in my mind right now, but there were many.
It's more than 6%.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the point then, you know, you mentioned LGBTQ as a subject issue. With this emphasis on, you know, a male predominance in textbooks and in societal images that we put out there, and a lot of the things that we see in terms of popular media, music, and all of that. Are we in some ways helping to confuse children about their sexuality? From the standpoint that if you were saying that, you know, yes, you can be, you know, lesbian, gay, bi, trans, whatever you want to be, and we say at the same time that, you know, all of us are equal and you have all the same opportunities, but yet all of the things that they are being taught in terms of the textbooks and all the rest of it comes across as, you know, male predominance. Are we then creating a confusion in the child's mind in terms of, well, what should I be?
No, I don't think it is a question of what should I be, as whether discovering your own identity. I do know that some people in the LGBT community do think that it is a choice, but the vast majority of the people that I've been in contact with and the studies that they have reported, I'm not that as familiar as they are, but would claim just the opposite, that it's not a choice. If it were a choice, who would choose something that, and this is also a video by It Gets Better, who would choose to, knowing that you will have more problems, to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a lesbian, I'm going to be gay, because it's, okay, maybe a few people would say, yeah, I feel like it. But the thing is that it seems as if it's not a choice that you're born or that you discover your
orientation.
And I don't think that talking about it makes it more confusing. I think it's the opposite. Not talking about it is what makes students getting into the closet. Whenever I have invited LGBT activists, and, for example, we invited at one point Kathy Payas, who's the president of Familias LGBT, after every time that she gets invited, afterwards there is always a kid that would come with the following kind of story. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, can I have the rainbow flag? Are you going to keep it for next year? Can you give one to us? That's the one thing. The other thing that you could say is, I know a friend of a friend. Okay, a friend of a friend told me once that she thinks that she likes girls better. Is it that possible, Trisha? That's the kind of comment. So I don't think that it's making them more confused. I think it's the opposite. It's kind of saying, okay, this is part of our everyday life, and it needs to be addressed. And kids who are perceived, not necessarily who are perceived as LGBT, get bullied five times more often than
kids who are not perceived as such.
Yeah, and kids who regard themselves as LGBT do get bullied because of that. And this is something that we do not talk enough in our schools. And I do think that as girls should be empowered, and we need to make them more confident. We need to empower them so that they choose mathematics, that they choose science, and not just the languages, which I love. I mean, this is my background.
But it goes back to, again, the basic issue here, that if the textbooks are weighted toward one particular viewpoint, then the normalization must come from the teacher being able to say, hey, this is maybe what it's perceived to be, but it isn't necessarily the way it should be.
Yeah, but also from the administration. It's only 2 days ago that the Ministry of Education has said that they are going to take an issue on how gender balanced the course books are, which I think it's a good news. We'll see. And there are different communities. I was included, but I want to cite, I think that the pioneers were in Andalusia, and there is this recent Junta de Extremadura that they have come up with a very nice kind of brochure that it's called Simple. It's easy reading, okay? So the idea is that the language has been adapted, and it is to address violence against women and girls. And it's been illustrated by somebody whom I just met, but I'm very thrilled that I met Ramon Besonias, who works for them and does the drawing. And he's got he has taken the trouble of drawing pictures of artists, female artists, and there is an entire project going on. It's Colegios Innovadores. I was puzzled by the names, because I associated colleges with private ones and even religious ones, but it's not necessarily so. And they are trying to say, okay, because there are artists that have not been included in most course books, it is our duty to help teachers, because we can't create everything from scratch. And I could say that we do need help from the administration as well as from...
From the parents putting pressure on the administration.
Yeah. And also, going back to course books, we have to think that if they are kind of monopoly and there are some groups that have an agenda, we have to look very careful as what those groups want.
Good. We'll be back for some closing comments right after this.
Sorry if it's hard to catch my vibe. I need a lover to trust, tell me you're on my side. Are you down for the ride? It's not easy for someone to catch my eye. But I've been waiting for you for my whole damn life, my whole lifetime. Don't be afraid to tell me if you ain't with it. I see your focus, yeah, you're so independent. It's hard for me to open up, I'll admit it. Just saying, I'm here to listen. So baby, tell me where your love lies. Waste a day and spend the night underneath the sunrise. Show me where your love lies.
I've been so into your mystery. Is it because of a history? Are you into me?
If you're down, don't hide it. Feeling me, you don't gotta deny it. Baby, you gon' make me overnight it. Tell me how you're down.
Tell me where your love lies. Waste a day and spend the night underneath the sunrise. Show me where your love lies.
Tell me where your love lies.
Tell me where your love lies.
And that was Love Lies with Khalid and Normani. Well, Teresa, what can parents do today? What are some of the things that they should be concerned about? What are some of the things they should look to do to help their children get the best possible outcomes?
Be a role model. If you want your kids to read, instead of complaining about why is it that they don't read, ask yourself, how much do I read? Do I read in front of my student, in front of my kids, not students, in front of my children? Do I listen to them having a conversation? It's been shown that one of the things that parents can really contribute is the bedtime stories, and also carefully listening and to what they say and being part of their conversation.
I think that's, you know, just basic stuff, which is really important to do.
But it's taken for granted, and still many parents don't do it. And some of the kids that we've got, not all of them, but some of the kids we get in public schools may not have even their parents around because they are raised by an aunt, a grandma, who works many hours. So they spend a lot of time. There is this study that I think it was in the media yesterday about the loneliness of teenagers and youth in general, and it has to do with parents working many hours, not being there and checking their mobile phone all the time if they are there. So,
well, again, there's a lot of challenges to that, and we'll be talking about it, I'm sure, in the weeks to come. Thank you for being with us today. We appreciate that. And we'll be back next Thursday with more English Radio. Be sure to check us out on Facebook. You'll find the archive file from today's show, along with others. And we'll be back to see you next Thursday, Barcelona. Have a great one.